Alright guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host Aaron Freeman, and today I am talking about the Falcons signing defensive tackle Tyler Davidson and a pair of safeties.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about a couple of roster moves that the Falcons made over the weekend, signing defensive tackle Tyler Davidson, signing safety Chris Cooper, signing safety Afolabi Laguda, and we'll talk sort of how these potential moves impact the Falcons draft plans as we're, you know, what, 10 days away, I think, as you guys are listening to this, from the when opening night of the draft kicks off on Thursday, April 25th. So, you know, interesting sort of late push in free agency for the Falcons, and the, you know, I guess now we're like what, in the third or fourth wave of free agency at this point in time in early April, when most teams are sort of focused on the draft. The Falcons are making some roster moves, which is a surprise given sort of their slow start and their typical MO. As I think I mentioned on a previous episode, I don't think the Falcons have signed many free agents or any free agents under Dan Quinn after like 13 days in their free agency. And now they've signed like, I don't know, four or five or whatever the number is. So let's start off talking with Tyler Davidson. I talked about him on last Wednesday's episode when I discussed Adrian Claiborne's return to the team. So I won't spend too much time sort of rehashing that. But, you know, Davidson, in a nutshell, is a really good run stopper. Spent the last 4 years in New Orleans, has been really solid, particularly the last 2 years, playing sort of as a run-down, one technique, playing that sort of shaded nose position that I sort of explained on Wednesday's episode. I think it was Wednesday's episode when I sort of explained the differences between the various techniques and how guys line up. So go check that out if you're looking for a more detailed explanation. So what's going to be interesting about this Davidson move that I don't think I really touched on Wednesday's episode was sort of how it's going to impact Deidre Sinnott's role with the team. As you guys may or may not know, Deidre Sinnott was primarily a one tech for the Falcons last year, and that's probably his ideal role, just the same as Davidson. And we kind of talked about this a little bit when the Falcons signed Terrell McClain, you know, after the draft last year, where it was like, well, McClain's sort of ideally a one tech. He's played some three tech. But, you know, I think at the time, I can't remember, I don't know, 11 months ago or whenever it was. But at the time, I was sort of, I think my thought process was you'd probably more likely see Deidre Sinnott play the three tech, just because given that he's the younger player and has less experience, he's a little bit more of a malleable piece that you can sort of mold into. But that wasn't the case. They had Terrell McClain playing more of that three tech, that penetrating role, while Sinnott was more of that, you know, that plugger at that one tech role. And so it'll be interesting for if the Falcons continue to do that and have Davidson, who I think is even more natural of a one tech, more better suited to play that one tech plugger role than Sinnott is, playing at the three tech, or do they give Sinnott some looks there? So it'll be interesting to sort of see how that plays out in later this summer in training camp. You know, a lot of questions are asked, so how does this impact the Falcons draft? I think it depends on what you thought the Falcons were going to do prior to this signing. I think if you thought there was a good chance that the Falcons would take a guy, a D tackle, very early in this draft, someone like an Ed Oliver, someone like a Dexter Lawrence, or a Christian Wilkins, I don't think that's as likely today as it was, you know, Friday before they signed Tyler Davidson. I think it's more likely that you'll see the Falcons try to devote some of those early picks to an offensive tackle and or a cornerback and or an edge rusher, and probably potentially wait till day three to get more of a rotational piece in their D tackle position. You know, I think given that this draft is arguably deeper at the D tackle position, you're more likely to find quality players, you know, going in rounds three and four and potentially later. I think that's probably a pretty good strategy, particularly compared to some of those other positions that we mentioned, which I think are a little shallower than the D-tackle group. You know, I think right now what Davidson really provides is, you know, strengthens an improved rotation from last year. I think there's no doubt that the Falcons have gotten better on their D-line rotation with the additions of Claiborne and Tyler Davidson, but hopefully they continue to build upon that in the draft. I think right now you have 8 solid players: Tack, Grady Jarrett, Vic Beasley, Claiborne, Crawford, Means, Sanat, and now Davidson. And hopefully they can add 1 or 2 more in the draft and get the, you know, this to a really solid, really strong 9 or 10 man unit that can really sort of make a bigger impact this season and really sort of help this defense make significant improvements in 2019. I forgot what year we were in for a second there. Sorry, guys. Oh, man. So much is going on. All right. So that's really all I wanted to say about Tyler Davidson. Again, you can get a little bit more insight if you go back and listen to last Wednesday's episode talking about Adrian Claiborne's return, in which I discussed Tyler Davidson. But that's really all I want to add to it. I think it's a good, solid move, as I said then. I think it's, you know, important that the Falcons continue to build on their defensive line and be active in free agency. It's a 1-year deal, so it's not necessarily sort of locking him in. But I think it's a situation where, given that I think he's going to be 26 this year, if he does play well this year, then you could very likely see the Falcons giving him more of a long-term commitment next offseason. So we'll have to sort of see how it plays out. So we're going to come back, talk about the 2 safeties that the Falcons signed. But before we get there, I want to let you guys know that it is a big week at the Locked On NFL podcast, where the Locked On Podcast Network will be unveiling their host-led mock draft. Each host of an NFL Locked On Podcast Network show participated in this mock draft. You'll get some trades, some crazy ones, but they're all picking their teams and representing their teams in this mock draft and providing their analysis on each pick, including yours truly. I did the Falcons pick. This is going to run all week on the Locked On NFL podcast, Monday through Friday. You're going to get insight from Matt Williamson. You're also going to get the host of the Locked On NFL Draft podcast, the Draft Dudes podcast, and much more as part of the Locked On Podcast Network, being all in on this mock draft over the next couple of days. So definitely you don't want to miss it. Go subscribe to the Locked On NFL podcast wherever you get this Locked On podcast, your team every day. So the Falcons signed 2 safeties over the weekend. I think on Friday they signed Chris Cooper and Afolabi Laguda. Both of these guys were undrafted free agents last year. Cooper, I think, was with the Rams, and Laguda, or maybe Laguda was with, I can't remember which team they were with. Laguda was a teammate of Isaiah Oliver at Colorado. Cooper was at Stony Brook. I've only really seen highlights of Cooper, so I can't really speak totally to his skill set, but the highlights suggest that he's, you know, a hard-hitting but undersized but still an athletic sort of strong safety that fits and could sort of push Sherrod Neesman and Ryan Neal for a potential roster spot. Laguda, I'm going to call him Afo. Laguda is more of a free safety type. That's sort of more where his role and his skill is suited at when he played at Colorado with Isaiah Oliver. I think he showed some skills to cover some slot receivers. I did watch a little bit of him last year in the lead up because the Falcons did work him out. And when I think they worked him out the same day that they worked out Isaiah Oliver, he was part of that workout. And I had to go back and refresh because I couldn't remember exactly what I saw last year. But my refresher, I was like, oh, yeah, he's probably more in the mix in terms of being a backup at that free safety spot. I think for both of these guys, you look at them more, you know, on the spectrum of big time contributors to on one end to, you know, camp bodies. I think they might probably favor a little bit more closer to camp bodies, but I do think, unlike sort of your typical undrafted free agents, both of these guys, I think, spent some time on practice squads last year. I think Cooper was with the Chiefs and Laguda was with the Rams, but again, I could be getting that confused. And so these guys are a little bit better than your sort of typical undrafted free agent just because they have the NFL experience. And obviously, you know, generally speaking, if you're good enough to make a practice squad, you're generally good enough to make a roster. There's just not enough spots for you. And so I do think these guys are just not necessarily, calling them camp bodies, I think is not fair. But I also sort of don't think these are guys that you can definitely say, you know, are the same as signing sort of experienced depth at those two spots that you're definitely going to, sort of fulfill that need. So I still think going into this draft, the Falcons could potentially take a safety, but I think it's far less likely now because I think you sort of look at Laguda, you look at Cooper, even though they were undrafted guys. Now that they have a year under the belt, now that they've proven that they can sort of be good enough to make practice squads, you can sort of consider them to be sort of on par with probably a sixth or seventh round pick, which is probably where I thought the Falcons were likely. If they were going to draft a safety, that's probably around where they were going to do that. So I do think, you know, all that being said, all that to get to the point is, yeah, I do think they sort of effectively will replace a sixth or seventh round pick at the safety position. It's interesting because the Falcons worked out a couple other safeties on Friday, and presumably Cooper and Laguda were the two guys that stood out in that workout, and that's why they got the contracts. But they're working out several other guys on Monday as you're listening to this. They have a defensive end from Air Force and Ryan Watson. They got an offensive tackle in Ulrich John, and they got a defensive end, Chris Odom. Odom's probably the name that jumps out to you. He was most recently with the AAF at Salt Lake, and you also may recall, I think he was in Falcons training camp back in 2017. He got cut, and the Packers scooped him up, and then the Packers, I think, cut him last summer, and then he wound up in the AAF this spring. Watson went to the Air Force Academy, and then he was a player I think the Falcons worked out at their local pro day in 2017, but due to the rules of sort of, you know, fulfilling his military commitment, he couldn't really sign a contract with an NFL team, and I think he was most recently at Air Force's pro day this year, and I think he tested reasonably well. For a player that, you know, probably hasn't been spending the last 2 years training for the NFL. But he's basically an undersized defensive end. He's like 6'3", 255, if I'm not mistaken, from his pro day measurements. Ulrich John is the journeyman offensive tackle that I think was most recently with the Patriots. I think he spent the year on IR, but still got a ring. I think prior to that, he was kicking around with the Packers and Cardinals and Dolphins and Colts. He most infamously was the starting right tackle playing with the Cardinals back in 2016. That was a game that Vic Beasley really did a number on him. Vic Beasley didn't have a sack in that game, but he did have 8 pressures according to Pro Football Focus, which was the highest he had that entire season. And he also had 2 hits on the quarterback that game as well. So, you know, if the Falcons do wind up bringing in Ulrich John, you know, that's going to put him and Ty Sambrello on the same team. So 2 out of the 3 players that Vic Beasley most embarrassed in 2016, the other one being Rob Havenstein with the Rams. And so both of those guys would be on the Falcons roster. So clearly Dan Quinn has a plan to take all the guys that Vic Beasley whooped in 2016 and put them on the Falcons roster to build up his confidence. So, you know, the interesting thing I sort of noticed is that Ulrich John went to Georgia State. Watson is an Atlanta native. Odom obviously spent some time here in Atlanta a couple of years ago. Laguda is an Atlanta native. The Falcons also worked out Ed Reynolds. He was one of the safeties that worked out on Friday, and he most recently was playing with the Atlanta Legends franchise in the AAF. And I think Hageman also lives in the Atlanta area. So some of these players that the Falcons have worked out over the last, week or two, all sort of have local ties, and so it seems like at least the Falcons are sort of scrolling through their Rolodex and basically like, who are all the guys in sort of this area code, and do they play football, and let's work them out. And some of them they have signed, and others they have not. So that's interesting to me. That it seems like for the most part, the Falcons are sort of just focusing on working out everybody that's like in a 60 to 90 mile radius around the city of Atlanta or whatever the case may be. So, we'll wrap things up sort of talking about how these moves potentially impact the Falcons draft and whether it signals that they're going to trade up. I want to let you guys know that you can get this show or your other favorite Locked On Podcast Network show every day by subscribing on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to your favorite Locked On Podcast Network show, your team every day. So we're talking about sort of do these moves now. You know, I saw a lot of people sort of on Friday and Saturday seeing these moves come across the wire and saying, oh, you know, now the Falcons have filled some more holes. Now they're definitely going to trade up. And I understand the sentiment because you look at the Falcons roster currently, you see the 9 draft picks. You don't really see 9 holes on the roster where rookies are all going to make the team. And I think that's a fair assessment. I think really where it is at is even if the Falcons didn't have 9 picks, I think they would still be hard pressed to sort of get these 6th and 7th round picks to make the team, just because the talent level of the team, you know, we always talk about how talented this team is, but there's no denying that the team is, you know, on the upper half of the more talented teams in the league. Well, you know, where they rank in the upper half is sort of dependent on your opinion, but they're certainly more talented than your average NFL team. And so I think it's going to be difficult moving forward for 6th and 7th round picks to make the team, unless it's situations like we've seen in the past where the Falcons have basically, in a lot of those guys' cases, sort of cleared the runway, so to speak, to get them a roster spot. Like you saw that with Devin Fuller a couple years ago when the Falcons cut Devin Hester. I think the Falcons cut James Stone the summer after they drafted Wes Schweitzer. You know, we saw Russell Gage come in last year and replace Eric Weems. We saw Foye Olakun come to a team that really had no linebacker depth besides, I think, Kamal Ishmael was like the only linebacker that had NFL experience going into last summer on the roster with Olakun. So it does seem like the Falcons have a tendency to sort of clear the runway for these 6th and 7th round picks to give them the maximum opportunities to make a roster. I don't necessarily know if that's going to be the case this year with these 6th or 7th round picks. And the reason I bring that up is just because I look at this team I look at this draft class potentially and say, yeah, they're not going to use 9 picks. But I think, you know, they can probably, even if they weren't filling these needs, the chances that they were necessarily going to use those 6th and 7th round picks on players and think that they were going to really add a whole lot to this team wasn't great. And so what you probably more likely see is the team sort of use those picks to package them together to move up probably in rounds, you know, 4 or 5, where they can sort of make a substantial difference. They don't, you know, no team is going to move back, you know, 10 spots in round 2 to pick up a 6th round pick or anything like that. But, you know, a team might do that in round 4 or 5. And so, you know, I think the team could move around to get some guys that they really like at other positions of need. And so I think sort of looking at it and being like, oh, the Falcons only have like, you know, 5 holes on their roster, and so they're not going to use 9 picks, trade up confirmed. Yeah, you're probably right. They will trade up at some point. I'm pretty confident of that. And we talked about this recently on the episode that Dave Choate was on, where we were talking about sort of their history of trading up. But I don't think it necessarily means that means they're going to trade up into the top 10. That I still remain very skeptical of that, because if you do trade up into the top 10, you know, all the rumors or whatnot, I still remain highly skeptical that you can move up 6 spots in the first round or 6 spots in the upper half of the first round, I should stress, without giving up a 2nd round pick. But, you know, various rumors and reports out there are saying like the Falcons would only have to give up like a 3rd or a 4th. To go from 14 to 8 or something like that, which again, I'm highly skeptical of, but let's say that's true. You know, if you do that, you give away those 2 picks to move up to get, you know, an Ed Oliver or whoever, you know, then you're left with what, a 2nd round pick, a 4th round pick, and 2/5, a 6th and a 7th. So you still have 7 picks, right? In reality, you know, you still have like what, 6 picks left. And so you wind up with 7 picks in the draft. But in reality, because those 6th and 7th round picks that you wind up using or keeping and using aren't necessarily safe bets to make the roster, you really only wind up with like 5 picks is sort of the point I'm trying to make. And that's part of the reason that's fueling me, my skepticism of the Falcons trying to trade up. I know a lot of people, you know, want this team to trade up. I get the desire to do so. I'm not against trading up, even though I've spent a lot of podcast time over the last couple of days saying I don't think it's going to happen, and giving reasons why I don't think it's going to happen, and reasons why arguably I don't think it should happen. But it's not to sit here and be like, I don't want the team to trade up. I don't really, if the team trades up, then, you know, awesome, great, you know, assuming they get the player that we're all talking about. But I just don't think it's likely to happen. And so I think particularly over the, you know, various people out there that have basically spent the last 3 weeks just only, you know, all their draft conversations are primarily about this team trading up, and every roster move that they've made over the last 3 weeks is filtered through the lens of, does this, you know, Ed Oliver trade up confirmed? I just think it's sort of leading you guys astray to a certain extent. and either you're going to come to draft day and be expecting a trade up because that's all anybody has talked about for the last 3 weeks and be disappointed on draft day if and when it does not happen, or, you know, it's just going to completely skew your perception of what the Falcons do wind up doing because it's going to be filtered through the lens of, is the player that the Falcons do wind up taking as good as Ed Oliver and whatnot. So I think that's where I tend to be like, okay, we don't have to do this, you know? And so I guess for me, it's just, you know, I think there's a 90% chance that the Falcons don't trade up into the top 10. You know, obviously I know some of you are like, oh, you're always leaving the door open. You're right. I have to leave the door open because I've been wrong enough. And this team is so unpredictable when it comes to what they do, particularly in the first round of the draft in recent years, that you can't necessarily say anything in terms of absolutes. But I think, you know, there's a very slim chance that the Falcons trade up into the top 10. I think if they are going to trade up in this draft, I think it's more likely that, you know, an Ed Oliver or Brian Burns is there at pick 11 and pick 12. And then the Falcons decide, you know, we're not going to sit here and wait for our guy to fall to us. We're going to go get our guy. And if you're jumping from like 14 to 11, I think then you're only giving up a fourth round pick or something like that, which is much more palatable than, you know, the second and fourth or the second and third that I'm suspecting that the Falcons would have to give up to go from 14 to 8. And so that's sort of how I sort of see it. I think more than likely, however, though, the safest bet, the most likely outcome is that the Falcons are just going to chill there at 14 and take probably the best offensive tackle on their draft board, which I think will probably come down to either Juwan Taylor, Cody Ford, or Jonah Williams. You know, previously it seemed like Juwan Taylor was going to be a lock to be a top 10, but then there's been recent reports from people like Tony Pauline sort of saying that there are some medical red flags surrounding, some undisclosed medical red flags surrounding Juwan Taylor. I don't know, you know, the how truthful those rumors are, whether that's a smokescreen, someone's hoping that they're going to get Juwan Taylor the fall. However, given that every team has medical reports on Juwan Taylor, it's unlikely that you can just sort of make that up and then suddenly an NFL team is going to be like, wait, we heard about this medical red flag thing. Did you check it? Oh, no, you know, I don't know about that. But so I think it's plausible is basically what I'm trying to say here and say. And every year we sit here and watch a couple of guys fall in the draft, you know, because there are some medical issues with them. We saw that, you know, several years ago with Miles Jack. We saw that last year with Maurice Hurst. Josh Sweat was another guy last year that was supposed to be a top 40 pick and wound up getting picked in the fourth round. I remember Jorian Johnson, the guard out of Pitt, a couple of years ago. I think he was supposed to be like a second round pick, and he wound up falling, I think, to like round 5 or 6 or something like that because he had a liver issue. So this happens all the time. So if there are some of those issues with Juwan Taylor, a guy that seemingly people were sort of penciling as a top 7, top 8 pick, you know, for most of this offseason, might wind up being there at 14 and might wind up, you know, the Falcons may be a team that red flag him as well and might wind up passing on him. So I think, you know, because of that, you know, sitting here today, I feel, you know, I won't say confident, but it's probably going to be like Cody Ford, because I think, you know, I think Jonah Williams is a better player than Cody Ford, but I think Cody Ford sort of mashes better with sort of the Falcons sort of hashtag physical movement that they're going with this offseason. And so they'll probably likely prefer Ford over Williams. So we'll see. That's, you know, obviously it's April 15th, 10 days before the draft. That's my opinion of what is the likeliest outcome. If you're asking me to put money down today, I do think it's going to be Cody Ford at pick 14 as the Falcons pick. But again, I don't think that's a lock by any means. And there's so many other alternative scenarios that could happen. And there's going to be some weird stuff that happens in the draft. And I think this draft, it seems likely that the way this draft is setting up, that we kind of know who the first four picks are going to be. It's going to be Kyler Murray, Nick Bosa, Josh Allen, Quinnen Williams. Then Tampa Bay is going to hold the card at pick 5. You know, I think the popular perception is they'll take Devin White, but who knows? And then sort of thereafter, what the Giants are going to do, no one knows. Some people think they'll take a quarterback, offensive tackle, pass rusher. And so that's really where the sort of the draft is going to break. At least that's how it seems, you know, again, 10 days ahead of time. And sort of what domino effect that causes from pick 6 to 10, and then obviously from 10 to 14, is so hard to determine. So that's one of the reasons why sitting here, I can't be super confident about any of these predictions, just because there could be some weird stuff happening. You know, all of a sudden, you know, the Giants or Jacksonville could take Cody Ford at 6 or 7. I don't think that's going to happen, but I won't sit here and say that there's no chance that that's going to happen. And all of a sudden that makes that predict, you know, unlikely. So we'll have to see how it all plays out. But I do think these moves, you know, give the Falcons more flexibility to trade up. But I think instead of thinking it's going to be on that first night of the draft, I think it's more likely that you'll see them sort of move around on day two and or day three in order to make sure that they get the guys that they are confident are going to actually make the roster and help them out. And so, you know, the last point I'll make is sort of looking at this roster right now, I think there are probably 5 needs, or I would say 4.5 needs. I think they need an offensive tackle. I think they need a defensive end. I think they need 2 corners. And I think the half need is a return specialist, because I just don't trust Kenyon Barner. And so I think given the Falcons, again, I wouldn't draft a return specialist if I was a GM, but given the Falcons' proclivities, I'm pretty confident they're going to draft a return specialist and likely be a guy that plays wide receiver as well. So I think those are the 5 picks that I think are most likely to happen, if not certain to happen, on the Falcons. But again, you can never talk in absolutes, as I mentioned. But I do think there's other positions on the roster where they could use some more depth. Center is one of those positions. Defensive tackle is one of those positions. I wouldn't be opposed to them adding a good blocking tight end that can push Logan Paulson. I know some of you guys out there want the Falcons to go out and get another running back to bolster the depth there. We talked about sort of them adding another backup Sam linebacker that could potentially, you know, if you draft that guy high enough, he could potentially be groomed as a starter to potentially replace Devondre Campbell next season. And, you know, I think if you look at those spots, I think that's 10, if my math is not off, that you could wind up, you know, filling and or tweaking 10 roster spots. So it's not sort of this completely foreign concept that the Falcons could keep all 9 picks. I think it's unlikely, but it's not as if you can't find, you know, 8 or 9 spots on this roster that you can say, okay, we could get some better players there. And again, you know, whether or not those 6th and 7th round guys are going to be better than some of the guys you have currently on the roster, I think is definitely debatable. But certainly in the first 4 and possibly 5 rounds, you can certainly upgrade those spots. So I think keeping as many of those picks as possible makes a lot of sense for the Falcons moving forward if they want to continue to build their depth, which we know last year was a major issue. And I think sort of just, you know, assuming that we're just going to be healthy again this year and we fix all of our depth issues because we've signed guys like Chris Cooper and Afa Laguda, you know, I question that a little bit to a certain extent. So all that to say, we'll have to see what the Falcons do. It's always going to be interesting with the Falcons draft plans, and we'll come back later this week to talk more draft. If you guys have any feedback and comments and questions that you want to submit, you can do so on Twitter at @LockedOnFalcons, Facebook at @LockedOnFalcons. Of course, on the email address is LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment on FalcFans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. Check out FalcFans.com, where I put up a recent mock draft. As a disclaimer, it's not necessarily a predictive mock draft. It was just I wanted to do some interesting scenarios that just could throw some curveballs and out there in round 1. So don't look at that and be like, oh, Aaron had this player pick to the Falcons or this player pick to any of the other teams, and he thinks that's going to be likely. I have an idea of sort of what my final mock draft is going to be now 10 days ahead. And obviously I had 10 more days to tweak that. You know, probably only maybe like half of those picks I think are quote unquote accurate in terms of what I actually think is a likely scenario or a likely outcome. So, you know, as the case should be with all mock drafts, take it with a grain of salt, have some fun, enjoy it. And there you have it. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.